right center net.
Bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going on this Thursday, October 31st. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Well, Wes and I are about to, by the way, text line open, 960-960. Wes and I are about to do our very, very best to get into the Halloween spirit on this October 31st. Final day of October. Calgary's first game of the new month, November, is Friday against the New Jersey Devils. We're going to try to do something Halloween themed. I thought about like getting the spooky laugh from Thriller. I thought about doing sound effects. I'm like, no, I just can't do it.
As long as you thought about it.
For like maybe half a second, then I'm like, no, we're just not going to do that. We're already doing a Halloween themed segment. So I can't go too much more cliche. It'll hurt my heart.
I didn't realize you were so opposed to Halloween.
I'm not opposed to Halloween at all. It's been a long time since I have done anything Halloween themed. That's all. When was the last time you put thought and effort into a costume and then executed said costume? Like, it would have been still the 90s for me. Last time I did that. I have never dressed up as an adult in my life.
I'm not sure I have either, but I think, you know, for a guy like you, like, now these days, Marc-Andre Fleury is dressing up like you.
Easy. That already made the amount of people on Twitter who made fun of me about him dressing up as McLovin. I already feel attacked enough on that. Back off, Marc-Andre. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do something somewhat Halloween themed. And instead of going full cliche and calling it trick or treat, Wes came up with a better name, somewhat more original, but still snappy. Sweet or scary.
Let's do it.
So basically, we've each come up with a couple of different things that could be in the good category. Of things that we've liked through the first 10 games of the season. Flames are 5-4-1 in their first 10-game segment. They're 5-4-1 in their first month of this 24-25 regular season. So, sweet, that would be the good stuff. Scary would be the bad stuff. I feel like you knew that, but just, I feel that if you're listening, you probably knew that.
Okay.
Here's your Sherlock Holmes.
We're going to go over the rules one more time. Sweet is good. Okay. Yes. Write that down. Sweet is good.
Scary.
Bad.
Yeah. You want to start? Or you want me to start?
Text us if you have any questions.
Yeah, please. If that's confusing to you, please, I'll do my best to unconfuse you and probably make it worse. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Why don't you go first?
Okay, you know what? How we should do it? You tell me sweet or scary,
okay,
and I'll give you one.
You got something for me?
Yeah.
You know, this is a glass half full kind of bunch, so let's start with sweet.
I'm going to go goaltending.
Okay.
Because I think it has been, even though the last couple of games we've seen the numbers drop, 5 goals against it for each guy, Vladar 5 on Monday, Wolf 5 on Wednesday. I still feel like goaltending has generally been a big positive for him.
Yeah.
I do. Like, that was, and you know how big of a fan of Dustin Wolf I am. I thought that was Calgary's, you know, first goaltending start that I wouldn't put in the quality category.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Dustin struggled a little bit. A couple of goals that, you know, you probably would have liked to have back. The one that really jumps out is the 2-0 goal, which ended up being the game winner with less than 2 seconds to go. You're like, that's one for the first time all year. You're like, geez, you really needed a save there.
That was my exact reaction to that goal. I was texting back and forth with my colleague at Post Media, Danny Austin, and that was my immediate reaction. That's the first goal this season on Wolf or on a Flames goalie that I thought, you got to have that one.
And I don't think it's his fault, but I do think 5-on-3s are always going to be tough on Dustin Wolf.
Sure.
Because he is dynamite. A couple of people had texted in during the game on Wednesday criticizing how Dustin handles traffic, which I think is garbage. I think Dustin Wolf is borderline elite at how he sees through traffic when that traffic isn't static. But because you're down two men on a 3-on-5 kill, the net front guy gets a lot of carte blanche, and it's tough to move him because your defenders are worrying about taking away the pass, and that cross seam is so much more dangerous on a 5-on-3 power play. So all of a sudden, Barrett Hayton posts up in front of Dustin Wolf and has size on him, and there's nobody to move him. So Dustin Wolf moving around, that I think is always going to be a struggle for him.
Yeah.
That might be the number one area where his quote unquote size disadvantage comes into play. So he's
always going to be a guy who, because of his size, has to get in a crouch to look around traffic, right? We even saw it on the disallowed goal last night where the top of the net was sufficiently open because of the way he has to crouch that, you know, I think you take the good with the bad there, in the sense that he's going to make some saves on those cross seams that you talk about because of his size. He's also going to leave those corners exposed sometimes as he tries to look through traffic. Now,
anyway,
let me ask you this.
I digress.
Let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Is there any concern after getting 5 hung on them twice that the goaltending moves from sweet to scary?
I'm not concerned yet, just because the balance of work or the body of work has been quite strong. I mean, even after two games where they've allowed 10 goals, Flames are still fifth overall in 5-on-5 save percentage at .933. That still speaks very loudly to me. Their overall save percentage through their first 10 games of the year, where does it rank them? It ranks them 11th overall at a team save percentage of .896. So I look at what they've gotten from their two goaltenders. It has not been as good over the last 2-3 games, but I still think it's been strong and one of the strongest facets of their game. So I'd put that in the sweet category.
I agree.
Which way? Okay, how about you give us a sweet one too. We'll start very positive.
You know, I got to go with Justin Kirkland. I just think that has truly been one of the feel-good stories in the National Hockey League. And we don't need to go really deep into this topic because I think people know the background, you know, the journeyman grinder, the guy who's been working his tail off in the minors forever. You know, the guy who had a car accident. I talked to Dallas Aikens, who was his coach with the Anaheim Ducks when he was in the car accident. And Dallas told me he walked into the hospital room that night, and his first thought was, I can't believe this guy's alive. Based on what I'm looking at, I can't believe he survived that crash. And so for Justin Kirkland now to have played more NHL games than he ever has in a season in his career, for him to have scored a huge goal in a Battle of Alberta, for him to have ended that shootout in the fashion that he did, for him to be given Kevin Rooney a hell of a run for that fourth line center job. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Kevin Rooney on waivers at some point, because Justin Kirkland might have wrestled that job away from him. Now, I think they'll let that competition go on for a few games, but you know, Justin Kirkland has really come in and made a statement that after all these years as a minor leaguer, he should be in the NHL. And that story, that storyline, certainly belongs in the sweet category.
Yeah, I agree. It's been all of the off-ice stuff is awesome. You know how you talked on Wednesday about how much Michael Backlund has, this is not just another game, his 1,000th NHL game. And for Justin Kirkland, this is not like, you know how we always say things like, act like you've been there before, right? Well, in some ways, Kirkland is, but the ways that he isn't are very endearing and very good. Like, yeah, it's special to him that he's playing in the NHL.
Yeah.
It's special to him that he's getting this run. It's special to him that he's producing in the NHL. Had another assist on Wednesday in Utah. Like, all of that stuff makes this an extremely easy story to get behind, but he's also playing well. And that's the other part, is that so far he's been good for them, and to your point, made it very difficult for the Flames to take him out. You know, last hour, the first hour of Flames Talk, when we were talking about Matt Coronato, who was recalled Thursday and Sam Hanzek sent to the American League, you talked about how, to this point, maybe Matt Coronato hasn't made it impossible for the Flames to send him down. And that's now the next step for Matt on this most recent recall. Well, so far, Justin Kirkland has done that in his role, but he's done that. He has said, hey, you want a guy to be your number four center who can bump up if needed to in a pinch? That's me. You can't send me down. And he has been utilized in an extremely difficult role. How about this? In Justin Kirkland's time, 5-on-5, he has played 9 games, just over 88 minutes at 5-on-5. He has taken 15 offensive zone faceoffs in 9 games. He has taken 60 in the defensive zone. Literally 4 times more defensive zone faceoffs than offensive zone faceoffs so far. He's done a good job. He's not the difference between being a good team and an elite team. He's not a guy that is going to put you over the top. But you know what he is? He's an awesome story who's proving that in a role that the Flames have needed to fill since the Kevin Rooney injury, he's the guy to fill it. And now, as you said, making it difficult for Rooney to get back in there. And which you feel bad for Kevin because he's also such a really good dude and you root for him too. But Justin Kirkland has been very, very good. And I give him a ton of credit for what he's been able to do.
You're up. Give me a scary.
Okay. Scary. So sorry. I'm so sorry.
Can we cut that, Chan?
No,
can
no,
we cut
let's
that
just,
from
we,
the podcast?
Yeah, that's
no,
just completely.
Just
no, we should just end the show. Honestly, I'm sorry. Flamestock has been canceled permanently.
Come on. Give us something scary.
Yep. That's it. Dump it. I'll go special teams. Like, I'll put them both in the same category because, Wes, I honestly don't know which one has been more difficult to watch. Mm-hmm. I know the power play was productive in the first 4 or 5 games and even won them a game against Chicago when Andre Kuzmenko scored that redirect goal. But, boy, power play has not only dropped off, it is now hurting them. Like, it killed their momentum in the first period. Ryan Huska said as much post-game on Wednesday night. Like, the power play hurt them on Wednesday and was a part of why they lost the game. Not just because they didn't score on it, but because it gave momentum to the other team. And the penalty kill, again, hurt them. They allowed 2 power play goals, and one of them was, you know, the 5-1 goal is what it is, but the 4-1 goal, that took any remaining wind out of Calgary's sails in Utah. So special teams has been very difficult to watch here. They now rank 23rd overall on the power play. And the thing that is most troubling, after the penalty kill was a real bright spot for them last year, they are down to 27th overall on the penalty kill at just 70.6%. Last year, the penalty kill was a real strength for them. This year, it's been a weakness.
Especially lately.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is special teams are fixable, and a penalty kill specifically is very fixable. But through 10 games, it has been a weakness for them. There's no doubt.
I'm going to add one to the mix because I had 3 numbers grouped together on my scary list. I was just calling them percentages, and you know, you did a good job of outlining what's been frightening about a power play that is not clipping along and has hurt them, especially in these past 4 games. A penalty kill that is struggling mightily. And I'm going to throw one more percentage at you, and that's 44.4. the Calgary Flames success rate at the faceoff dot, 30th in the NHL. And we're talking about a team that does not have a single guy at or above 50%. You do not have one guy on your roster with a better chance of winning or a better percentage of winning his draws than losing them. Your top faceoff man right now, Nazem, I guess Yegor Sharangovich is at 47.4. Nazem Kadri is at 47.3. Michael Backlund at 45.8. And then you can go down the list. Justin Kirkland, Martin Pospisil, Kevin Rooney. Like, they're, if you're a team that is going to have to fight as hard to get the puck back as the Flames are and wants to play that style that's going to wear down opponents, you have to win some faceoffs. You have to get the puck sometimes. And so instead of echoing what you're saying about the penalty kill, which needs to be better, instead of echoing what you're saying about the power play, which helped them win games at the start of the season and is now helping them lose games, I'll throw one more percentage in, and that's that if you're the third worst faceoff team in the NHL,
mm-hmm.
it ain't going to work.
Yep. Okay, give me one scary one.
You know what I find a little bit scary? Their upcoming schedule. And I see that because they've already dropped four straight, because I've seen Jacob Markstrom go into Vancouver and play some really good hockey games. I think he's a guy, and I don't know what the numbers will say on this, but my memory is that Jacob Markstrom is a guy who played quite well against his former team more often than not. And so that scares me a little bit. Motivated Jacob Markstrom, maybe not even motivated to prove the Flames wrong, but motivated to show, you know, I do think Jacob Markstrom feels like he was run out of town a little bit. And so you've got a motivated Jacob Markstrom coming in Friday. You've got the Edmonton Oilers, albeit without Connor McDavid, but you've got the Edmonton Oilers on Sunday. And then you have what to me is basically a five-game road trip with one game in Calgary. They go Montreal, Boston, Buffalo, Calgary, Vancouver. And with a team already struggling, I find that upcoming schedule to be a little bit terrifying.
Yeah, man, that's fair. Okay, what am I doing next? Do one more sweet and one more scary each, or you want to do...
Yeah, you want to do a little more rapid fire?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, why don't you give me... give me one sweet, and we'll wrap up the sweet and a couple more scary on the way out the door.
Okay. Connor Zary, that's a real positive for me. He is not so far. That's a positive. That's a sweet. He has not fallen victim to the sophomore slump so far. He's been productive counting wise, and he's also been very productive just in terms of the way he's driven things.
Yeah,
I've been very, very pleasantly surprised by what we've seen from Connor Zary, and whether he's been on Backlund's line, which is extremely difficult in terms of the responsibility, whether he's been on any other line, it's been a very, very positive stretch here for Connor Zary. So I would make that a real sweet spot for him.
Let me, I'm going to give you two. I just want to mention Michael Backlund's 1,000th game one more time, because that was on my list of sweet. It's not the one I'm going to highlight, but pretty cool accomplishment. The other one I had listed as a sweet, and I just generalized this one as development stories. And I know that you keep tabs on it a little bit. I keep tabs on it a little bit. Like the Calgary Flames, if you track their prospects, and with the excitement about the future direction, I know lots of people are, there have been a ton of positive development stories to start this season. There's been a lot more Reese's peanut butter cups than candy corn. You know, you look at...
That was worse than my...
Should we cancel the show again?
Yeah, we should cancel the show again.
If you look at this recent draft class, you know, you've got Parekh, Basha, Jacob Pataglia, all averaging over a point per game in the Canadian Hockey League. You've got Matvei Gradin, Henry Muse and Luke Misa, who are each just a game under, or sorry, a point under a point per game. So could be there by the end of the weekend. Sam Honzek, we've talked about plenty today, obviously coming in and winning a job as a guy who was drafted in 2023. Now today going down to the Wranglers. Etienne Morin, I think, has had a really strong bounce back to start the season in Moncton. Idar Suniev was scoring at will to start the season at UMass. Like, I just think on that list of sweet, the sort of development stories, and I'm sure I'm missing a few. You could even mention Jacob Pelche in that. Like, there's just been a lot of positives. Rory Cairns, a lot of guys that you could highlight that seem to be trending in the right direction.
That's a pretty good way to wrap it up, I think.
Give me one more scary. Come on. I'll give you mine.
Okay, my last scary is the pump and dump candidates.
Okay.
Kuzmenko and Mantha have, if you're trying to maximize those guys and get a good asset at the trade deadline, right now it's not trending super sexy, I'll say that.
You know, mine, and it goes maybe a little bit, nah, it's not really dovetailing with yours. I got carrying 8D. I just don't get it. I don't understand why they continue to be healthy, scratching two veteran defensemen. And I know you don't need a young forward sitting in the press box, but as you sort of shuffle guys around, as you try to figure out where Matt Coronato can fit, I just don't get the 8D.
Yeah. I like that. Sweet or scary. Presented by Pat and Wes on this hour of Flames Talk. Happy Halloween, friends. We're coming at you from our Groundworks Downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And this hour continues on a Thursday, as always on Thursdays in hockey season. Our buddy Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver, joins us. Kevin on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Lots to dive into with Kevin when it comes to goaltending around the league. Mr. Woodley, how are you?
A little sleepy, that 7:40 start, not to whine, because I know you guys get the 8 p.m. every once in a while, but we're soft out here on the West Coast, so when they start us late like that, and then, you know, yeah, it's tough. I'm old, man. It's, you know, and we had a few complications behind the scenes in terms of actually getting to where we need to go as media, so it was, you know, I'm whining. It's old. I'm tired. It's just it's not even raining here, for crying out loud. Listen to me. It's pathetic.
I mean, look, West Coast soft is a thing. We all know that.
It is, 100%.
Look, yeah. I complain about non-7 o'clock starts, though, too. And I'm not West Coast soft. I'm just soft. So don't
feel too bad.
You know
how it is. After 20-some-odd years, the second period ends, and you look at the person next to you, and you're like, shouldn't this game be over?
I still will never forget the two series Calgary and Anaheim played against one another 2 and 3 years. And there were like the 8:30 was announced, but they were getting going at 8:45 Calgary time. And like, we wouldn't even be starting post game until midnight. You're like, okay, this is a little extreme. Playoffs, you accept it, you know, but I do feel you. I feel your pain, my friend. So hopefully no more.
Well, I don't experience as often as you guys. So I really come off as soft and whiny. That's brutal.
It's all good. Hey, what have you made of the last couple of starts from this Flames group? We saw Dustin Wolf allow 5 Wednesday night against Utah. Dan Vladar allowed 5 on Monday night in Vegas. We've talked very, very glowingly about Calgary's goaltending for the most part this season. Just curious your observations of the last number of starts here.
Well, I mean, a couple things. And first off, the caveat, I'm watching replays on video just because it was head-to-head with some Canucks games, some other things that I had to keep an eye on in other markets. I wasn't able to watch it live. I was too busy trying to fight off a nap last night. So looking at the stats and then running through the goals and watching video, like, you know, statistically on the score sheet, neither one of them are at expected. Utah only ended up with 6 high dangers last night, and they get 5 goals, including 1 low danger, which is what the Sergachev one was classified as a clear sight shot. And I think that's, and I love the behind the net replays that we get quite often. Clear sight looks for those. And so you could see that one, and I'm like, oh, there's a screen there, and it's not counted as a screen in the tracking. But when you look at it, you have pretty good eyes on it. And so that's one where really easy to say for me from my couch to sort of hold your ground there on that one. But he got caught sort of shrinking a little bit, and it's a rip, right? Like, this is the thing about goaltending in the NHL. Like, practices can be bad for goalies because everybody has so much time and space, and everyone in the league now, it's never been more true than now, can absolutely rip the puck and pick spots and bar down. And so patience on those open looks is important, and he drifted a little bit backwards and it cost him there. The Vegas game was another one where statistically, like, they weren't bad defensively. 5 high danger chances against and 5 goals against. A couple of mid dangers go in against Fodor. And then when I look at the replays, like, even on the mid dangers on these guys right now, there's just a lot of time and space. And so even though, you know, what doesn't get counted in these factors is time and space is a category, but whether a guy uses that time and space to, you know, go right by the goalie's ear and just under the bar doesn't. And what I'm seeing defensively is some gaps between the forwards and the defensemen, and that time and space being more prevalent in the last couple than we've seen early on. And guys are getting good looks and they're picking spots. And so that's something you'll have to keep an eye out for. The two previous games, Carolina and Winnipeg, also obviously both losses, but, you know, on 5 goals and 4 against, those weren't as good defensively. Those were 10 high danger chances to 2 very good offensive teams in each case. So that one, those two were a little less about the goaltending, but, you know, I think in the last two, you know, if you're going to be fair, you need to have a chance for this team. And actually, to be honest, in the Vegas game, they didn't generate enough to have a chance in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely do you see a team offensively have 1 high danger and less than 1 expected goal, but that's where the Flames were in Vegas. Like, they just generated nothing. So would it have made a difference? No. But in both of the last 2 games, I think you can fairly say there's a couple that this team's probably going to need from their goaltender, a couple more saves that this team's probably going to need from either guy to have a chance in some of these games. And yet, even as the underlying numbers paint a decent picture defensively, I think you can see some of those gaps and some of that time and space that is starting to creep into the Flames game defensively.
Okay. And definitely something to keep an eye on as they get set to host a very talented New Jersey team and a New Jersey team that also happens to boast their last number one goaltender, Jacob Markstrom, who you just saw. I know that you know Jacob quite well from his time in Vancouver. He was just in with New Jersey, posts his first shutout as a member of the Devils, and we're expecting him to get the start Friday against the Flames. Well, just in-person observations on Jacob and overall observations on Markstrom in his first month now as a member of the Devils.
He looks really relaxed and comfortable. And even post-game last night, talking to him, and they were in here for a practice. They actually practiced here today because they had plane problems last night, and so they weren't able to fly to Calgary until today, so they skated here again. He seems, and as he said to me, he's been through it now a couple of times, like switching teams. And I think that matters. Like, having patience with yourself and with your game and understanding that you can't just snap your fingers and transfer what worked in one place to another place, that there are different reads, that you do have to read off of your defensemen differently because they will do different things at different times with different timing in different places on the ice, and that's a process. The thing I like the most, what I saw last night, and it was not a busy night. The Canucks generated next to nothing. The only really high-quality chance they had, really dangerous one, was a breakaway for Teddy Bluger. As Jacob said, he kind of lost the puck. It was rolling on him, and it was, you know, just had to seal up the holes. There were only a couple of times, and we, like, listen, statistically, it hasn't been as good as many people wanted for him there. And we've talked about this before, how Jacob is usually at his best when he's busy. And the Devils under Sheldon Keefe are no longer asking their goalies to be miracle workers. And so that's going to be an adjustment. And outside of a couple of instances on a couple of scrambles last night where he chased a little, I was really impressed with the patience of his game, the poise of his game, the fact that he, you know, on a night where he wasn't busy, he didn't look like he was trying to do too much. And that's been the case in the past. And that's one of the reasons that I think statistically those low event games have been a bugaboo for him. And it looked a lot better last night. It doesn't mean it's going to be an easy process from here on in for him, or that there won't be, you know, some ups and downs to come, but he seemed really comfortable with the environment. and he seemed really comfortable with his game, and his game looked like it did on its best nights in Calgary. I think like it was, I thought it got quieter in Calgary than it was in Vancouver. And I think it's going to have to be even quieter in New Jersey because they're not going to be asking him to do what the Flames were asking him to do last year. And so it's almost like a different approach. And I think it feels like he's got a handle on that both mentally, but also with the work he's doing with his new goalie coach. They're doing a lot of stuff to just sort of quiet, keep him down and over pucks and not reach and not extend. And last night, at least, it looked like it was working.
Kevin, I might be wrong on this, but, you know, just off the top of my head, it seems like Jacob Markstrom played a whole bunch of good games against the Vancouver Canucks after signing in Calgary. And so as we prepare for his first matchup against the Flames, like, is that what you see in him? Do you see a guy who maybe puts a little something extra special in these games against his old employers?
Ooh, that's a really good question, a really good point. I want to say I retweeted something last night, but like I said, you know, I mean, I was half asleep because it was so late and I'm so old. But I do feel like I retweeted something last night along those lines. Like, there weren't a lot of shout-outs here, but that maybe it was something else. But I know he has had success here with the Flames against Vancouver, and I could see that. And yet the irony of that is that everything I just said about not trying to do too much runs counter to it, right? Like, but again, in Calgary, especially last year, and I know they weren't the same team for all the years he was there, and under Daryl Sutter, there was, you know, the goalies were required to do different things in terms of how busy they were and the types of chances they faced. But, you know, last year he was asked to do a lot and he was busy, and he's always been a guy that people think of as being at his best when he's busy. And so I would think trying to do too much because it's your former employee, because it's your old team, would actually have the potential to bite him in the butt, you know, compared to what I saw last night, which was such a quiet, controlled game. And yet you're right. Statistically, I do know he's had a lot of really good games against the Vancouver Canucks coming back here. So I just can't remember what they all looked like. You know what I mean? So I don't know if those two things necessarily mesh. But for whatever reason, and maybe it's just a focus thing, he is a guy that I think has done that and has done well by that. And I, you know, for all the things that were said at the end that were polite and the right things to say, I don't think there's any question that the way it went down last year and not getting moved before the deadline left a sour taste. So if that is the case, then I should go find the odds on a consecutive Jacob Markstrom shutout for tomorrow.
When not to look past Jacob Markstrom, but next up for the Flames would be the Edmonton Oilers on Sunday. What are you seeing in the Oilers crease these days?
Well, it hasn't been great overall, right? And I don't think anybody is trying to pretend that it has been, but it has steadied a little bit of late. Like, they've been a little better. Obviously, Skinner gets the shutout and then gives up a six burger the next night. Or in the next start against Columbus. As much as the Flames goalies are both slightly below expected, the Oilers goalies are in the bottom third in the league. Skinner's 58th in adjusted save percentage and Picard's 61st. So obviously not good enough. The environment isn't to blame. Last season when the goalies struggled early, they were the worst team at high danger chances off the rush. They stubbed their toe a little bit out of the gate this year, but they for the most part settled down. And the goaltending, while it's had its moments, as I said, just hasn't been good enough overall. And maybe Skinner's just a guy that has slow starts. Maybe that's ultimately what we find out about him. And like I said, there was the shutout in there. I thought he was full value, even though they lost it in overtime and blew a 2-0 lead in the third period. I liked his game. I watched it in person, or watched it closely live against Carolina in the start before that. The biggest difference to me in Columbus is what they gave up. And on that night, they reverted to giving up rush chances. Maybe it was losing McDavid and the shock of that. But as soon as you get into a rush game with the Edmonton Oilers, Stuart Skinner's numbers, they don't quite fall off a cliff, but they're just not nearly as good. And so if you're the Flames, you're looking to generate rush chances and counterattack and try and create that way, because that's been the biggest weakness in what has been another slow start for Stuart Skinner and frankly for Calvin Picard as well.
Kev, and last one for you before we wrap up. I know you just saw Carolina in person as well, coming through Vancouver. They're going to be without Freddie Anderson for a little bit here. We talked last week ahead of Calgary's game against the Canes about Kochetkov, and then looked pretty good for them in that game against the Flames. But now without Freddie Anderson, what should we expect from this Hurricanes group?
Well, it'd be really interesting because right now Freddie Anderson has the best adjusted save percentage in the entire National Hockey League. And I talked to him when he was here and he felt really good about his game. So you feel bad for a guy who's been through it on the injury bug. And then obviously with the blood clots last year, you know, we talked about the plane for New Jersey, not being able to get out of Vancouver. Well, obviously I think you guys, we've all seen the story now with the McDonald's and Brent Burns.
Yeah.
The fact that team had to get on a bus for 4 hours after the Seattle game, as much as that wasn't what caused the injury to Freddie, I can't think it helped being a lower body injury to sit on that bus for 4 hours. So you feel bad for him, but Kochetkov, as good as he was there, he wasn't here. And all the things I talked about him in terms of the aggression and finding that balance and reining it in a little bit, they all disappeared against the Canucks. He gave up a long-distance slap shot to Quinn Hughes under the blocker, unscreened from just inside the blue line to make it 3-2. And then on the tying goal, on a play where his defenseman looked to have caught up to a partial breakaway, he came flying out of his crease to try and poke check a guy at the top of the faceoff circle and basically gave a freebie because he couldn't get back into the net in time. So that's the part. And the Canes, Rod Brindamore said all the right things after the game, and I love that they recognize and they don't hide from those mistakes and they admit to their mistakes, but he couched it by saying, like, this is an aggressive guy and he's fast and he's athletic, and so that's part of what we love about him. He just has to pick his spots better, and we're nurturing it and working through that. In the meantime, though, statistically, like, it's night and day from Freddie Anderson, so it'll be interesting to see whether Kochetkov can be a little more refined in his decision-making. And they can rein in that sort of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, like, there's a wild horse there. And it's a good thing. Like, there's a lot of power, there's a lot of speed, there's a lot of athleticism. But there's times when it just works against them. I mean, I tweeted during the game, because I think he had 4 or 5 attempts, that from now on I was calling him Poke Chekhov. But come to find out that's not a secret, they already have a T-shirt in Raleigh, Poke Chekhov. So everybody there is aware of it. It's just really interesting to see how sort of long it's taking to rein it in a little bit and where they ultimately find that line, that balance point for him. And I would suggest statistically that right now it still tips a little too far towards the wild side.
Great stuff as always, my friend. We always appreciate the time. We will catch up again next week, Kev, but enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Thanks for doing this as always.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy Halloween. Don't eat too much candy tonight.
Ha! Promise we will not. That is Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru. He joins us every Thursday here on Flames Talk. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline as we start to wrap things up this hour. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. We did sweet or scary. Stay sweet, Wes.
I'll do my best, buddy. You too. No scary tonight, okay? No scary Steinberg.
No, nothing scary here either. I promise. Nothing sweet can stay. Okay, we gotta go. I really have tried way too hard to get into the Halloween spirit and failed. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Shan and Colton, our producers this hour. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.